Well, good afternoon. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Pat Moore. I'll be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. And my guests include today Mike Hutcherson from the Juneau Job Center. He'll be here to tell us about Wednesday's opening of the Juneau Job Center job fair. And Kathleen McFerrin will join us over the telephone to tell us about a nonviolent communications workshop she's conducting this weekend. And David Rosenthal will be here to tell us about a solo artist opening he has at the Alaska State Museum. Weather looks like sunny weather. Highs around 39, northeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. It'll decrease to about 10 this afternoon near downtown Juneau and Douglas. Northeast winds 25 with gusts to around 55.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. John Graham, a Canadian man convicted in the murder of Annie Mae Aquash more than 30 years ago, is appealing his conviction. According to the Associated Press, his attorney went before the South Dakota Supreme Court Monday. The claim is his case should not have been allowed to move from federal to state court after Graham's extradition to the United States. In 2010, Graham was convicted for his role in the kidnapping and shooting death of Aquash on the Pine Ridge Reservation in 1975. Graham and Aquash were said to have been involved in the American Indian movement at the time. Prosecutors say Graham and two other AIM activists killed Aquash because they thought she was a government informant. A South Dakota college is preparing for a two-day event to recognize the upcoming 40th anniversary of the Wounded Knee Uprising. A former activist with the American Indian Movement plans to speak at the event. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
In February of 1973, about 200 Oglala Lakota and representatives of AIM took over the small town of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Their goal was to bring attention to what they were calling more than 100 years of grievances. For more than 2 months, the protesters were involved in a standoff with state and local law officials and the FBI. Next month, Augustana College in Sioux Falls is hosting the Dakota Conference, featuring 2 days of speakers and sessions dealing with the uprising. Former American Indian Movement activist Russell Means will address the conference. Officials with the college say Means' topic will be Wounded Knee before, during, and after. The event will feature people from both sides of the occupation, including federal agents and prosecutors, activists, and witnesses. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A new report shows some good news in tobacco prevention efforts among Alaska Native people. KDLG's Mike Mason has more.
Tobacco comes in many forms, ranging from cigarettes to snuff, but there's one constant. It's a killer. The efforts at tobacco prevention and control in Alaska are documented in a new report that looks back over the last 10 years. The data shows that adult tobacco use in Alaska has dropped by over 20% since 1996. Andrea Finotti is the Deputy Section Chief for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. She confirms the smoking rates of Alaska Natives are nearly twice the rates of non-Natives. Finotti says a similar pattern is seen in the data related to Alaska Native high school students who smoke.
The good news there is that disparity between Native use and non-Native use among high school students has been decreasing. So the gap is getting smaller over time, but we still have lots of work to do on that front.
Back in 1995, 62% of Alaska Native high school students smoked, but that dropped down to 23% in 2009. Finotti admits it's unknown why there's such a significant difference between the smoking rates of Alaskan Natives and non-Natives.
We certainly believe that some of the efforts that we have already put in place are starting to have an effect, but we also have been undertaking for well more than, well, I would say, a couple of years now, a really concerted effort to really examine that question. Are there things that we can be doing differently, doing more, doing better?
While progress has been made, smoking is still a way of life for many Alaskans, and the state is still in the top 20% in the nation in terms of smoking prevalence. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
During this week in 2007, the first National Native HIV/AIDS Awareness Day was observed in the United States. It's an opportunity for Native people and tribes to learn about HIV and AIDS. Healthcare agencies encourage HIV testing and prevention. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Kiwanis is accepting reservations for the 17th Annual Alaska Native Art Auction. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Visit knba.org or call 907-793-3528 for reservations.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO News. This is Pat Morey hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. Let's check that weather one more time. Today, the forecast for the rest of this afternoon is for sunny. Highs around 39. The northeast winds should be 15 to 25 miles per hour. Those ought to knock down to about 10 miles per hour later this afternoon. But near downtown Juneau and Douglas, of course, they're going to stay up. Northeast winds will blow 25 miles per hour and gusts to around 55 miles per hour. So tie down the plywood the backyard. It'll be mostly clear tonight, lows around 25, just like last night, north winds 10 miles per hour. In the evening, becoming light and variable. If you have a chance to step outside, put a warm coat on and take a look at the stars, there should be, I think, four planets up by about 10 o'clock tonight. So it should be a pretty bright situation out there and a little stargazing. Near downtown Juneau and Douglas tonight, northeast winds 20 to 30 miles per hour. Those ought to knock down again to about 10 to 15 miles per hour late, but we will have wind gusts up to 45 miles per hour this evening. And then Wednesday, we're looking at partly cloudy weather. Wednesday night, the same. Thursday, mostly cloudy, and cloudy with a chance of snow and rain by Saturday and Saturday night. So that's the outlook for the next couple, 3 days. We'll see how accurate that turns out to be as we go on here. My first guest today is here to tell us about an event that is coming up, Wednesday, I think, at Centennial Hall, right?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Here's Mike Hutcherson, who's the Job Center Manager out at the Juneau Job Center. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what? Tell me about the event. What are people looking at seeing when they walk into Centennial Hall?
Well, this is going to be our eighth year putting on this event at Centennial Hall, and we'll have most of the hall occupied, the main ballrooms. When they come in, you'll see our booth right off the bat, and we're going to act as the tour guides, for lack of a better term, and work with the job seekers to get them routed to the right table. We also have a layout of the floor plan of the event so that we're handing that out at the front door as well so people can navigate their way through the traffic.
How many got signed up as far as businesses or people who are recruiting?
Last count, we had 47. Okay. Businesses that will be there tomorrow afternoon.
What's the range? I mean, are we talking about from high tech down to
a little bit of everything? Absolutely. We have from Alaska Department of Corrections to Western Auto and everybody in between, Costco, Fred Meyer, Safeway, a couple of the credit unions, Alaska USA and True North, and just a little bit of everything, retail and some of the summer seasonal employers.
Are these all Juneau hiring?
They are all Juneau. Circus, okay. A regional entity, but most of them are local employers.
So these are Southeast Alaska at the furthest. You're talking about local job offers here.
Yes.
Okay. In the past, how many people have come through seeking jobs at your annual event?
Yeah, we usually have two events. One is in the fall. We refer to it as the fall job fair, and this one is the spring. In the fall, we get usually anywhere from 350 to 400. In the spring, it can be 400 to 500 people coming through looking to engage employers.
Do you have any sense of how many people actually get hired out of the job fair?
Yeah, we do a post post-event survey, and some of the employers report back that they were able to hire immediately at the event, which is advantageous to them.
And advantageous to the site of the job seeker.
Absolutely,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what kind of numbers are we looking at out of the 350, 400 who showed up?
Well, I really don't know a definitive number,
okay.
But I know, again, just through the feedback surveys, the hiring was, it happened at the event.
Okay. And then is there also after-event hiring? Does people
Absolutely.
Assemble?
It continues. And some of the employers will actually have individual hiring sessions that they'll hold at the job center post-event.
Oh, I see. Okay. So call people in.
Absolutely.
Say, take names and then
yep.
bring them in for interviews and like that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So if I were, wouldn't it be wonderful, if I were 19 years old.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't it? And I were coming down to this event, how should I prepare myself and what should I bring?
Well, the first thing we talk about is first impressions. And, I think you have to come dressed and ready to be engaged. And not only dressed and ready, but also be prepared with the applications, the resumes, the cover letters, and be able and willing to have a conversation about your skills, your training, your education, and your experience. You're trying to impress an employer at this time, and you're trying to leave a favorable impression so that they'll want to either set up or schedule an interview with you later or go ahead and take care of it on the spot.
You said application. So is your advice that someone who's coming to the job fair should already have an application filled out for the employers they're going to interview with?
We encourage the resume, unless you are targeting a specific employer and you know what that application is. If it's not online, if they accept the hand-carried version, then yes, come with it.
So how would someone find out if the employer that they were thinking of targeting is actually going to be at the job fair? Is there a list posted somewhere?
There is a list posted in the Juneau Empire.
Okay.
But also, if they make contact with us, we can let them know as well.
So if I had been kind of looking down the barrel at somebody and thinking, I ought to go to work for those folks, I could get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
And you would tell me that they were going to be at the job fair, and
you
then I
bet.
Could get the right application stuff
Absolutely.
Together.
We'll point you to the website. We'll get you going on the process. Because, our role in this whole thing is to get you prepared before you have the encounter.
There's a lot of advice for job seekers that the cover letter that is sent in with the application is extremely important, but I'm trying to figure now how the mechanics work here. If my first contact with a potential employer is going to be in Centennial Hall, and I've kind of been thinking I ought to go talk to those, and I find out that he's there, how do I deal with that cover letter thing that kind of introduces the resume and often takes the place of it?
Well, what we are fortunate enough to have at the event is a little, for lack of a better term, again, a media booth where people can come, get online, download their resumes, look at employers' applications, or sit down and craft a cover letter at the event itself if they don't have one in hand prepared before.
So you got a little computer lab set up where people can actually do
you
this
betcha.
Work. Oh, okay.
And sometimes employers run out of applications and they can download their application as well.
There you go. So and you've got online access
yes.
For people to come in. Is there any fee for someone who's seeking a job?
No, it's free and open to the public.
So they're open to the public. Do the employers pay in order to exhibit?
Yeah, there's a sliding scale depending on the advertising packet that they picked up with the Empire. But a basic table is $50, and it goes up from there.
So you're a partner in this job fair with the Juneau Empire.
Oh, absolutely. A strong partner. We could not have done it without them. They are just so instrumental in the success and outcome of everything we do.
So what are the dimensions of that partnership? What did they do and what do you do?
Well, it's a group effort, really. We get together. We recap the prior event. We look at what vendors or businesses were not present at the last event, try to get them on board, try to make sure we have a good representation of all the industries that are here. And what the Empire does is, because we're a public entity, we're not handling the funds. The employers that are paying for coming to the event, the Empire takes care of all of that headache that we can't deal with, but also they deal with ads and advertising for employers just like we do. And so we kind of work collectively and collaboratively and try to get a good list and try to work that list and encourage employers to sign up and participate.
Now, Mike, you're out on the road on the way to the university.
Yes.
And when you're not in Centennial Hall running a job fair, there are other services that the job center has every day.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about people using the job center?
Absolutely. We are open daily from 8 to 5, and there's always someone there during the lunch hour. And what we're able to do is work with you on a wide spectrum of needs that are related to getting a job, keeping a job, or finding a better job. We have what we call employment security specialists who are manning the front lines that will work with you to identify the jobs, look at your strengths, craft cover letters and resumes, do a job search through our job bank, the Alexa system. We also are fortunate enough to be a full-service job center, and we have what's called a career or vocational counselor that works with people in transition who might not know what they want to be or do when they grow up. We also have a training team that will work with people that look at their current skills now and see if they need additional training to be competitive in the type of work they're pursuing. So we kind of look at ourselves as a full-service center and are, again, able to help you with just about anything. And if not, we're going to try to point you in the right direction.
I have a question. I don't know. We didn't really talk about this in advance, but it occurs to me as we're sitting here talking. I'm a little older than 19, and I'm wondering, I'm at the age where I'm actually looking for volunteer opportunities in the sense that I have retirement, so it isn't necessary for me to make a dollar bill out of everything that I do. Do you have any assistance for people in my situation?
There's no age discrimination. We work with everybody.
Yeah,
and also the Department of Labor. We have a program called the MAST program, Mature Alaskans Seeking Skills Training, and they will help placements for individuals who are 55 and older.
Okay.
So, yes, we're there to help you as well.
Oh, okay. So all ages.
All ages.
There's, again, no charge for your services, right?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
And if someone wants to contact you and get an appointment or anything like that, I assume you have a website. I assume there's telephone numbers.
Yes,
so
do.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you bet. Our website is www.jobs.alaska.gov, and we are located at 10002 Glacier Highway, right beyond Industrial Boulevard, right by Pavitt's Fitness Center, and we're also can be reached at 465-4562. That's our main line.
Outstanding. Mike, the job fair opens what time on
it
Wednesday?
It is tomorrow, Wednesday, the 21st, from 2 to 6 at Centennial Hall.
2 o'clock, 6 o'clock, Centennial Hall. If you have any questions, you'll be set up with the booth right at the door.
Absolutely.
If you get down there and you need to do something with your resume to switch it around so it gives the right set of skills for a job, you can do that right there in the lab.
Absolutely.
And it's free to anyone who's coming in the door looking for a job.
Yes, we can't wait.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike, for coming down
and
telling us about
me.
This.
Thank you.
music appropriate to the upcoming job fair, which everyone is encouraged to attend on Wednesday starting at 2 o'clock in Centennial Hall. I have guests in the studio and on the telephone line. So let's bring up the telephone line and meet Kathleen McFerrin, who's going to be in town, I guess. Are we talking this coming weekend? This coming weekend to conduct a workshop on nonviolent communication. And here in the studio with me is
Claire Murphy.
Okay, and Claire, you're doing what in relationship to this?
I'm the organizer for this event.
Oh, okay, the organizer. I like it. Okay, and Kathleen, are you with us?
I am.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. Kathleen, where are you?
I'm actually on Bainbridge Island, right outside of Seattle, Washington.
What kind of weather do you have today?
Well, it was beautiful for a while with the spring weather, and we've got a little bit of rain now.
Ah, well, we have bright sun here, but some winds, so we're kind of getting blown about as we step outside.
Oh.
Everyone I saw today walking on the streets was wearing their hoods of their parkas up over their heads, not fur parkas, not like Eskimos, anyway.
Yeah, so, I'm looking forward to being there, wind and all.
Yeah, well, hopefully that wind will die down by the weekend, it's supposed to, but you may get some snow while you're here, so bring your skis.
I love it.
Okay, so what are you going to do while you're here?
Well, I'm looking forward to having an exploration with whoever shows up for the workshop into how can we really live with courage and authenticity in our daily life, and that's basically stripping away some of the things we've been taught, that getting back to what we do know,
stripping
so that we can connect, just getting back to what we know as human beings. How do we converse with each other and connect with each other in ways that help us resolve conflicts and get along?
What are the things we need to strip away, Kathleen?
Yeah, I love that question. That'll be part of the exploration. Is there's some ways of thinking that have kind of an us-them connotation, that somehow we're taking it, that we're separate from each other, that we're different, that there are insurmountable barriers, and looking instead at the places where we have common ground, where we connect with the basic values that are common to all of us. I found getting to that place and really exploring those leads to a lot of connection in places that we didn't think was possible.
I've recently read a book where the author was talking about the reptilian brain in each of us.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of what you deal with? Is that model something that you work with?
Sometimes I like to, it's not my area of expertise, but I often like to bring that piece in, just in terms of that's often how we interpret things and go into that fight or flight or freeze mode. And there is research out around the kind of work that I'm doing, that bringing in empathy will help bring back the prefrontal cortex area of the brain and help soothe that, and so we can bring in our higher thinking skills and make clearer choices.
How did you start this?
I started actually by reading the book Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, and then I heard him talk, and I got hooked. It was a way that I wanted to live. It synthesized in many ways a lot of the practices and viewpoints that I'd held growing up. And I was a music conductor for 20 years and wanting to bring harmony to the world, and this was just another way of using my ears and skills to bring connection to the world and more harmony and peace.
Still conducting?
I'm not. I'm doing this full-time now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Claire, how did you come to be the organizer of this event?
I actually attended a nonviolent communication workshop through AWARE last spring, and that was my first true encounter with nonviolent communication. And after that weekend intensive, I had a chance to practice by talking to other people who had been in the workshop, and through the practice and through just really thinking about it a lot, it completely changed how I view not just conflict, just all of my relationships with everyone around me, professionally, in my family, with my friends. And it was completely life-changing for me. So I'm an AmeriCorps volunteer, and this is my second year in the AmeriCorps, and we are asked to do a community action project. And this year, this is what I chose to do, is to work to bring Kathleen back to Juneau and partner with some organizations like AWARE and SAGA, University of Alaska Southeast, the Juneau People for Peace and Justice, and the Juneau Buddhist Peace Fellowship. It's a lot of co-sponsors to really just bring this to the community and share it. And hopefully, in kind of a continued way, we're hoping to do a practice group with this and have more continuous dialogue and education with nonviolent communication, also called compassionate communication. And I'm very passionate about it. And the really cool thing is that as an organizer, I've just had to stay organized because the support from the community has been overwhelming. As soon as I started interviewing people about what the community needs were, everybody wanted to be involved and to contribute. So, I mean, over 30 people are registered already, but there is space available. And Kathleen also has generously offered to do a makeup session on Sunday morning from 8:30 to 11 for anybody who's unable to make the Saturday session.
So when is the Saturday session?
Great question. The Saturday session is from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., so pretty much all day. So if you have an event you're committed to on Saturday, you can still be part of the workshop and do a makeup session in the morning on Sunday.
And then where is it?
That's at the University of Alaska Southeast Glacier View Room, which is a beautiful room in the library building.
It's true to its name, too. There's a nice view of the glacier down out of the windows on one side of the building. So, anyway, so the Glacier View Room, 10 to 5. Is there a charge, assuming?
There is a suggested tuition
of
$150.
Okay.
But it's very important to all of the organizers of this event that nobody be turned away due to lack of funds. So just, if you're interested in coming, just call me. And there's scholarships available to UAS students and staff. And it's pay as you can if $150 is way out of the question for you right now.
Claire, how would someone call you?
My number is 609-902-3965.
That's an out-of-state cell phone. So you must be recent or fairly recently from somewhere else. Or
I've been here for about 2 years
for
now.
For about 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, Kathleen, your part, you have a center as well, a Center for Nonviolent Communication.
Yeah, I'm a certified trainer with the Center for Nonviolent Communication. It's an international organization.
There's only about 200 of those, right?
Well, there's one international center. We have about 300 trainers worldwide.
Okay. Okay. And what does one have to go through to become a certified trainer?
It's a great question. I'm one of the about four assessors in North America that help certify people. It's a process that combines three things. Is one is certainly just the conceptual knowledge of the principles, the underlying principles. More importantly, it's about how to integrate it into your life. How do you actually live the process, live the principles of compassion, interconnection, power with people rather than power over. And then there's a registration process and go through and be part of community. And this is like a 3 to 5 year process so that you're working on this together. And then there's a pre-assessment and also a final assessment.
Can you give us a brief idea of what folks will experience when you do the workshop this weekend?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that question. I enjoy, as I've used the word, exploration, so I'm not going in to teach people how to do things. And I also like it to be integrative, hands-on. So part of what we'll look at is the underlying principles of like interconnection and power with, and what it's like to give from a place of just natural, compassionate giving. And we'll be doing some exercises, some small group work, some working in dyads, some I've got cards. We play poker, believe it or not. We'll probably do that every night on Friday. And we'll also explore some things about what's it like to really be in a place of self-connection so that I can live in alignment with my values, and how do I get back to that place of self-connection when I get upset about something. That's a really important skill. How do I hear people when the messages are really difficult? They might be full of judgment and blame. How can I change judgment and blame into connection and understanding? And then how can I speak in a way that other people might hear what's true for me without hearing judgment and blame? And then we'll explore what our own personal reactions to conflict might be. Like, is conflict something that we try to avoid or run away from, or we head into it with a strong sense of wanting to fight through it, or is conflict something that we trust? And we can explore some of our personal reactions to that, and then how do we create a cultural container, really looking for cultural shift where we build trust, where people can speak honestly in a way that lets us invite conflict in and engage with it so that there's something richer at the other end.
Kathleen, very often when I've attended a workshop like what you're talking about, I found myself sitting there wishing I had read a book before the thing. What would you advise? It's Tuesday now, and you're not going to be starting your session until 2 o'clock Wednesday or 10 o'clock Saturday morning.
Yeah, because there's
Friday. Friday.
6 p.m. Friday.
6 p.m. Friday. So I have between now and 6 p.m. Friday to rush through something. What would you suggest I read in order to be ready for your workshop?
Yeah, well, if you want, if you're really up for a whole book, there's a book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. He's the founder of the work. There are, if you could also go to the Center for Nonviolent Communication website, that's cnvc.org, and there's, you can read a little bit about it on the website. That would give you some information. You can also Google. You can go onto YouTube and find some people talking about it. Another excellent resource is the NVC Academy. NVC stands for Nonviolent Communication, so nvcacademy.com. There's some things you can read on that website as well.
The website for the site was CNV, like Victor C. So it's not the Center for Nonviolent Communication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little confusion over a V or a B there. Okay.
And I also want to invite people, Friday night we will be doing a general introduction and overview. So I would also welcome people to show up and just with a sense of curiosity.
Okay, so let's get these times so that we're absolutely sure of when people should be where. So the first time that you'll be conducting something will be?
6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, March 23rd.
Okay, so 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, and that's sort of an informational session, right? Or is that part of the workshop, per se?
That's part of the workshop.
Okay, and then you come back at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning?
Correct.
And so it's 10 to 5
p.m.
on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then this makeup session on Sunday is what time?
8:30 to 11 a.m.
Okay, and that's a makeup for how much of the other?
If you missed Saturday or part of Saturday, you could attend this makeup session. And it's a shorter period of time, but the workshop, it sounds like it builds on itself. So it would be very important to try to make that time up. So when the Sunday session then continues, you have a good sense of your surroundings.
Kathleen, will you do any follow-up in Juneau after this workshop? Or Claire, will you?
There's been a lot of interest in a practice group, actually, and Kathleen has really given some good advice on that. And a lot of other communities have done practice groups. There's actually a workbook that's made to be put into a practice group. It's got 13 lessons, so it could easily be put into a 13-week series, once-a-week meeting practice group here in Juneau, and that's the intention, and there is a lot of interest, so I have a good feeling that will happen.
Yeah. Okay. I think we have all the details. Let's go over it just one more time in case somebody didn't have a piece of paper a minute ago. The first part of this is 6 to 8 p.m. Friday night, and that's with Kathleen McFerrin, who is from the Center for Nonviolent Communications, coming up from Bainbridge to join us up here. And then her workshop continues at 10 to 5 on Saturday. And if you can't attend part of the Saturday workshop, you can do a makeup between 8:30 and 11. All of this is taking place in the Glacier View Room at UAS, including the makeup session as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there is a suggested $150 tuition for attending the two-day workshop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But again, no one will be turned away due to lack of funds.
Okay. Kathleen, any last advice to someone who's thinking of coming?
Last advice. I hope to see you. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of people in Juneau And I guess the advice is I'm not looking to do a workshop that then has no meaning afterwards. This is information and exploration that I hope will really be integrated into changing life in a way that feels really good and natural and courageous.
So the practice session, the practice group that could follow out of this is really one of your most important goals.
Yeah, definitely the daily integration.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Looking forward to hearing more about this. If people want more information, they can call Claire at 609-902-3965. Kathleen, we welcome you to Juneau this weekend. I hope your stay is good, and I hope you get some of the snow you were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Mm-hmm.
Is by the group that is coming up here as the special guests at the music festival, which is going to be opening pretty quickly here on April 9th. So the group calls themselves the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band, an interesting name for a band, and we're looking forward to hearing them here in Juneau. Writer's Almanac, and then our next guest who will be telling us about a solo show that he's going to be doing here in Juneau.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 20th of March, 2012. It's the first day of spring, the vernal equinox, when the Earth's axis is aligned with the center of the sun, and day and night are as close to equal as they ever can be. It's the birthday of the dime novelist Ned Buntline, born Stamford, New York, 1813, got in a fight with his father, ran away to sea, started out as a cabin boy, became a midshipman, and he took up writing sensational adventure stories, first about gang wars in New York, and then he took a trip out west and met Buffalo Bill Cody, an Army scout, buffalo hunter, and Buntline wrote a very popular and exaggerated series of dime novels about him, Buffalo Bill Cody, King of the Border Men, made the stories into a play, Scouts of the Prairie, in which Buffalo Bill played himself. It was a big hit, and it made Buffalo Bill famous, and he opened his own show, Buffalo Bill's Wild West. Buntline, at one time, earned more money from his writing than any other author in the country, though what he wrote was trash. He was a drunk who loved to give temperance lectures. He was married 7 times, jailed once for bigamy, once flirted with a young woman, was challenged to a duel by her husband. He killed the husband. He was lynched by the townspeople. They strung him up from an awning, and at the last minute, Buntline's friends came and cut the rope, and he survived. It's the birthday of Henrik Ibsen, born on Skien, Norway, 1828, famous for his play A Doll's House, 1879. It was on this day, 1852, that Harriet Beecher Stowe's novel Uncle Tom's Cabin was published. She lived in Cincinnati, just across the Ohio River from Kentucky, and she was inspired by the Fugitive Slave Act to write a book about slavery, which sold about 2 million copies in 5 years. And it's the birthday of the Roman poet Ovid, born in what is now Sulmo, Italy, in 43 B.C., became a famous and beloved poet in Rome. He was privy to the inner circles of the court, published erotic poems, his Ars Amatoria, his Metamorphoses, in the year 8 A.D., and then suddenly that same year he was exiled, and even today nobody knows why. Ovid suggested somewhere that Emperor Augustus was angry because Ovid had seen something he shouldn't have seen, but there was nothing more specific. Whatever the cause, Ovid was sent to what is now Romania, where he was isolated, lonely, longing for his beloved Rome. He lived 10 years in exile there, and he died. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, entitled Spring. Somewhere a black bear has just risen from sleep and is staring down the mountain. All night, in the brisk and shallow restlessness of early spring, I think of her, her four black fists flicking the gravel, her tongue like a red fire touching the grass, the cold water. There is only one question, how to love this world. I think of her rising like a black and leafy ledge to sharpen her claws against the silence of the trees. Whatever else my life is, with its poems and its music and its glass cities, it is also this dazzling darkness coming down the mountain, breathing and tasting. All day I think of her, her white teeth, her wordlessness, her perfect love. Mary Oliver's poem Spring, from her new and selected poems, published by Beacon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, now offering social campaigns, a new tool designed to help small businesses turn fans into customers. Learn more at ConstantContact.com. Written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4, Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. We just got an updated forecast from the Weather Bureau here in Juneau. They're saying now mostly clear, lows around 24 for the rest of tonight, north winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, the gusts only to 35 miles per hour near downtown Juneau and Douglas. The winds will diminish late, it'll be partly cloudy tonight, tomorrow, highs around 38, northeast winds to 15 miles per hour, so the winds are going to die down a little earlier than they thought, and Wednesday night, partly cloudy, it stays cloudy, gets cloudier through Friday, and they're still saying we'll probably have a chance of snow on Saturday night. Also, they moved the snow from Saturday afternoon to Saturday evening. So that's a little update on the weather. My next guest is with us here from not Juneau. Today seems to be the day for telephone contact. David Rosenthal will be opening a show at the State of Alaska Museum. I believe it starts April 6th. Is that right, David?
Well, actually, there's an opening on the 23rd, coming Friday.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm going to do a talk on that evening at 6 o'clock at the museum. And then on April 6th, they have the usual First Friday opening, I guess.
Right. And so First Friday is quite a well-attended event in Juneau. People walk from place to place in the evening and pick up on the latest art offerings and hors d'oeuvres and that sort of thing. So you'll be part of that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So you do landscapes from memory of the places that you've been, primarily in the Arctic and the Antarctic. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, I do drawings at the site, and so I just rely on the drawings and memory and on just my experience to create the paintings.
Looking at your art, it's clear to me that you have much better color memory than I do. Somehow you capture skies as if they really must be.
Well, I think that I do get the colors really good, but that comes from practice, and I like to think that they're actually more accurate colors for the way we see things than what you get with film or digital.
You work primarily with oil, right?
Yes, mostly with oil. I do watercolor studies as well, but mostly with oils.
And what do you use for background? Are you on canvas, or do you work on the...
Most of my larger work is on linen. Then I do, once again, a lot of studies in oil on board, mm-hmm. and then, of course, the watercolors on paper.
Is there a huge difference in the way a painting sort of grows if you're working on linen versus on board?
There's not a real big difference. The way I work is pretty much consistent. I do an underpainting, and then I add layers and layers of paint until I'm just putting glazes on and modifying the glazes. So there's a lot of layers, but the linen and the board are pretty much similar, though the linen has a little bit of texture to it that sometimes helps in scumbling and other techniques with painting.
You started out as a physicist, David.
Well, I didn't actually become a physicist. I started out studying physics. I would hate to ever make myself out as an actual physicist. But I studied in college. That was my original interest, and then I didn't do very well in it because I didn't study as much as I should. And I ended up just picking up drawing as kind of like doodling and for a number of years, but I guess that was where my talent lay, and I became pretty good after many years, and so I've pursued it ever since.
You and I share the same freshman major and a similar change. I went into broadcasting. So,
but I would say that, you know, I like to tell people that I learned more in those year and a half of physics courses about painting in the long run than any art classes I took. I'm pretty much self-taught, but, you know, I approach every painting a little bit as a little bit of a physicist, where I try and figure out how the light works and things that you learn in physics. And so I didn't completely leave it behind.
No, it sounds like it, and it appears as you see the paintings that you have a really well-developed sense of how to communicate what light is doing in the world, which is really what painted art is much about.
Yeah, I've been, you know, doing this for 30 plus years now, and you know after that long a period, I've gotten pretty good at it.
I think almost all the pieces I've seen of yours are landscapes. Do you do other kinds of pieces? Will there be other kinds of pieces in this show?
In this show, it's all landscapes.
Okay,
and that's pretty much what I do. Although, on occasion, I will do other subjects. I participated in the U.S. Coast Guard art program where they let me ride on their icebreakers, and so I got access to some amazing landscapes in the Arctic and the Antarctic. But in return, I had to paint them a picture of their ship each time. So there's a few paintings of ships and shipboard life floating around.
But you've been to the Antarctic a couple of times on big NSF tours, right?
Yeah, actually, I spent 4 austral winters and 6 austral summers down in Antarctica. Some
Australian
of the time
winter and summer, the same, the opposite of our seasons.
Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, they're the opposite. And
uh-huh.
But I spent part of that time just working for the contractor as a way, for the NSF contractor as a way to get down there. But 2 of my winters and 1 summer, I was there as part of the United States Antarctic program, artist and writers program, and so those were really great opportunities to see a lot of the continent.
So have you incorporated the Southern Lights into any of your pieces?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, and I do have very few paintings of the Southern Lights. Even though I've spent those winters down there, most of my time in the winter was at McMurdo, which is very close to the magnetic pole. And believe it or not, it's not the best place to see.
It's inside the Southern Auroral Oval, so you'd be looking south for them.
Yeah, I'm too far. I was too far towards the magnetic pole. So, but I did see him on occasion, and there's a couple. I have one painting of the Ross Ice Shelf that actually has the Southern Lights and the Milky Way, and just an open sky with some ice. And so I've done them a few times.
Now, you also worked with the Artists for Nature Foundation.
Yeah,
on a project I think around Cordova.
Yes, in Cordova, the Artist in Nature Foundation came to town to bring attention to the Copper River and invited me to participate in one of the times. And it ended up, they ended up creating a book about the Copper River Delta that some of my work is in.
And when you come to Juneau, you're coming from Cordova, right?
Yes.
Is that where you make your home?
Yes.
So does that when you do the northern and southern tours, you have a little travel in order to get a new material for your paintings, right?
Yeah, I mean the last 5 or 6 years, I've pretty much just been working around Cordova. The last major travel that I did was in 2004 when I worked as a science tech up on the Greenland ice cap at Summit Camp. And so I haven't been doing as much traveling. It used to be for about 10 years there, from 89 to 99, I was half my time was in Antarctica. So, but nothing like that lately.
Well, we're looking forward to the show. When is, you're doing your lecture on at 6 p.m. on March 23rd.
Yeah.
What kind of thing do you anticipate covering in the lecture?
Well, I wanted to do this lecture. It's similar to a lecture that I've done in many places because I had a traveling exhibit to become the National Science Foundation artist. I had to show them that I would reach a significant audience, and so I had a traveling exhibit that I would at times get an opportunity to go and speak about my what I did in Antarctica. And so this talk is going to contain a lot about Antarctic work and how I got to these places and some of the adventures that I had to create the paintings that are up on the wall down there.
So you'll do a kind of a walk-around lecture with the thing, or are you going to, how will you present?
I believe we're going to, I'm not exactly sure, but I believe we're going to, I'll be showing some digital images, projected images of more of the work than what is at the show. The show, there was only room for, I think, about 7 Antarctic paintings in the show and some oil studies. So I wanted to have a chance to show a little more of what I did. I mean, that was over 60 months on the ice. There was a lot of paintings that resulted. So.
Yeah, so... The big travels, and then bring it home in a very wonderfully unique fashion and share it with the rest of us. So the show opens on the 23rd, and then it'll be open. There's no admission charge for your presentation. There'll be an opening reception 2 weeks later on First Friday, April 6th. You're coming back down again for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'll be coming through town again for that.
Good. And First Fridays between 4 and 6 p.m., of course, there is no charge for admission at the State of Alaska Museum here in Juneau. So, David, we're looking forward to having a chance to host you here in the capital city.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll be glad to take a look at your show. A whole bunch of us will be wandering through, I'm sure, on First Friday and maybe getting to your lecture on the 26th.
On the 23rd.
Yeah. 23rd, I'm sorry. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon on Juneau Afternoon.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah, bye.
This is Bird Note. One of the magical gifts of spring is to hear the dawn song. As early morning light extinguishes the stars, as the first rays of sunlight fill the trees, male birds begin to pour out their songs. Warblers, sparrows, chickadees, thrushes, finches, wrens, blackbirds, all sing at once. The songsters attempt to lure females into their territory and warn other males away. While the awe and majesty of this symphony at dawn are hard to convey, poet Emily Dickinson described it this way. The birds begun at 4 o'clock, their period for dawn. A music numerous as space and measureless as noon. I could not count their force. Their voices did expend as brook by brook bestows itself to magnify the pond. Their witnesses were not, except occasional man in homely industry arrayed to overtake the morn. Nor was it for applause that I could ascertain, but independent ecstasy of deity and men. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Programming at this station is supported by Valley Medical Care, offering a team of 14 physicians and nurse practitioners committed to healthy newborns, toddlers, teens, and adults in Southeast Alaska.
Jeff will be your host tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, and he'll be talking with T.R. Reid about healthcare in America, Juno World Affairs Council guest speaker. Elfrieda Nord will be here to talk about Saturday's Scandinavian Culture Fair. We'll learn about the weekend sports and recreation show. Peter Metcalf will be in to fill us in on that. And we'll learn about a Sunday film in Douglas and the week in Eagle Crest. Writer's Almanac, music, more, all with Jeff as your host on Juno Afternoon tomorrow. You're in tune with KTOO News. KTOO broadcasts at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276AF at 103.1. If you're driving through Lemon and Schweitzer Creek or you live there, you can get a better signal off of our station on 101.7, listening to K269AO. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM. We're on 88.1 MHz in Gustavus. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871, and our sister stations KRNN and KXLL can be found on 872 and 873. You can also listen to our stream on www.ktoo.org. A Petersburg resident has lost a bag of camera equipment that was left in an overhead bin on Alaska Airlines Flight 65 from Seattle to Juneau. It was left there on Monday, March 12th. If you happen to have found that bag of camera gear among your things when you left the flight in Juneau, please call Donna in Petersburg at 907-518-0144. Again, 907-518-0144 if you know where that bag of camera equipment that the Petersburg resident happened to have left on Flight 65 might be.